are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM New York.
Boom, 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 boom. It was the 12th month, boom, boom, on the 25th, boom, day. Boom, 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 boom. A little child was born, boom, boom, to brighten up our day.
On December the 20th, Adam and the staff here at WBAI will be sending gifts into a battered women's shelter for the mothers and the children. We would like to ask you for your help and participation in this most important project. If you can find it within your means, please bring a gift to 505 8th Avenue. The cross street is 35th. We're on the 19th floor, anytime between 10 and 6 p.m. This is the last week, so let me thank you now for your kindness. Have a pleasant holiday season.
Christmas means love. Christmas means love. Christmas means love. Christmas means love. And joy to our neighbors. Christmas means love.
I'm Howard Jordan, your new host for the Friday edition of Talkback. Please join me when, together with my guests, we will examine the critical problems facing urban America. In a freewheeling exchange of opinions and ideas, we will provide a new look at education, housing, immigration, crime, and other issues. Are communities of color and progressives headed for collision or coalition? Find out on Friday Talkback with your host, Howard Jordan, 3 to 5 p.m. on community-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM.
And it's just about 8 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. Time once again for Off the Hook. And you're listening to radio station WBAI. This is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And I think all my notes have just been stolen for the show.
Passing.
Okay, everything's under control now. Well, almost, really. There's always panic going around somewhere. And it's kind of up to us to help spread it around just a bit. And this is from the 700 Club. We just got this. You know, those nice religious guys over there. Cyber terror. Are we approaching an electronic Armageddon? And I think there should be an agreement. We don't talk about religion. They don't talk about computers, you know. But since they violated that, I guess I can talk about religion now. Hey, listen to this. Straight from the 700 Club. Two of the biggest threats against the United States could be a keyboard and computer. Now, right away, I mean, how can a keyboard be a threat without a computer? Unless you bash one of them over the head with it, I don't know. As a digital nation, and this part is underlined, America is dependent on its computers, making the country and its people very vulnerable to cyber terror. What in the world is cyber terror, you may ask? Computer hackers using electronic equipment can invade homes and businesses, stealing and destroying valuable data. The problem has existed for some time, but the threat is growing. In fact, a presidential commission recently issued a report citing America's vulnerability to cyber terror. Oh, yes. They don't mention that. It didn't make any sense. Kind of funny. And also, I should point out, cyber terror are two words in this particular fact sheet. A friend of mine, Jim Suttle, first of all, the guy's name is Jim Settle, but we'll just skip over that glaring inaccuracy, a former FBI agent. He's one of the guys that was helping search for Kevin Mitnick at that conference a few years ago, you know, arresting people who had the same, like, first name or something like that. It was a lot of fun. A friend of mine, Jim Suttle, maybe it's a different guy, a former FBI agent, said that give him... God, what atrocious English. A friend of mine, Jim Suttle, a former FBI agent, said that give him three hackers and 90 days, and he'll bring the country to its knees. I tend to agree with him. You know who said that? Those are the words of Win Schwartau. Yes, the same. Arguably America's leading nitwit. Oh, I'm sorry, I misread that. Expert on information warfare. What's that book doing in here? Get that out of here. Someone brought a copy of Information Warfare. Schwartau reports that basic information warfare is already underway. The best estimate we have today of the number of hacks that are going on is somewhere in the order of 20 million to 1 billion per year, from figures I got off the top of my head. When we look at the cost to America, we're looking at between $100 billion to $300 billion a year. Although the U.S. military has yet to experience a major attack on its infrastructure, the fear is that professional hackers, spies, criminals, or terrorists could trigger a national emergency by attacking a vital infrastructure through the private sector. Ooh, scary. General Robert Marsh heads the President's Commission investigating cyber terror, and was recently quoted as saying, "While a catastrophic cyber attack has not occurred, we have enough isolated incidents to know that the potential for disaster is real, and the time to act is now. The tools are available. The knowledge is available to do serious harm. Of critical U.S. concern are key areas of telecommunications, which the military also relies on heavily, electrical power systems, gas and oil production, banking and finance, from Wall Street to ATMs, transportation, including air traffic control, water supply systems, and emergency services. A criminal imagination could easily conceive a plan that, if successful, could be devastating. Already, the banking industry has lost substantial amounts of money to hackers, but is reluctant to report it to the police. Somehow these 700 Club people know about this, though. This God himself spoke to them about it. They don't want their customers to lose faith, says Schwartau. He knows how to adjust his speech to the audience. They worry about stockholders, potential for lawsuits, government intervention. But banks aren't the only ones vulnerable. Bob Stratton from Security Designs International, a firm that helps companies find the weak spots in their systems, says Every industry sector we have ever examined has had vulnerabilities that were exploitable. Another serious threat, and this is how you know when Schwartau's involved, are high-energy radio frequency weapons, or HRF guns, which send out electronic pulses that destroy all electronic information in its path. Currently, the U.S. military possesses HRF weapons and may have even used them against Iraqi positions in Desert Storm. At least two countries, Russia and China, are rushing to develop similar versions of these high-tech weapons for themselves. Hackers, too, are able to assemble primitive HRF weapons using parts purchased from a local electronics store. Such weapons, if used, could paralyze the country. Unbelievable. This is copyright the Christian Broadcasting Network. And I don't really know what the purpose of this is. I don't know what they're trying to get you to buy something. Well, yeah, okay, I guess. Yes, Pat, I want to join the 700 Club and share God's love with the lost and hurting. Here is my first membership gift of dollar signs, followed by a very long dash. I guess you could fit about six or seven figures in there. And I guess if you want the latest on computer hackers, you could either subscribe to the 700 Club or maybe something a little bit more hacker-oriented. I don't know. That's the latest from there. Access for All are the news. Access for All, they were on the show a few weeks ago. They filed a complaint on Friday with Chief Public Prosecutor Vreking in Amsterdam against the examining magistrate and public prosecutor who ordered Access for All on October 31st to tap the internet traffic of one of its users. The Ministry of Justice had based its instruction on Article 125I of the Code of Criminal Procedure. On November 13th, Access for All refused to comply, as in its view, this lacked all legal basis. Failure to comply with legal instructions is a penal offense over there. Given all the reactions that Access for All has meanwhile received, it has reinforced in its view that the ministry has exceeded its remit. On the basis of Article 125I of the Code of Criminal Procedure, tapping is not something that can be or should be requested. Access for All believes that the attempt by the ministry to compel it to cooperate in applying illegal methods of investigation should not be allowed to pass off without sanction. Access for All is urging that an early trial case be brought so that a penal court can pronounce on the finding and the action of the civil servants involved. That is just so cool. I mean, not only do these guys refuse to obey this, but they take them to court for having the audacity to ask them to do it in the first place. That's the kind of guts we need here in this country, which unfortunately we're sorely lacking. Speaking of guts, been quite a number of responses to the Free Kevin initiative. I don't know if any electronic billboards have been taken over with the Free Kevin phrase or anything else like that, or stickers or buttons or anything like that, but there are some websites popping up with nice big letters. In fact, if you went to Internet World last week, this is the first time I went to this, actually. I was there, I think, last Thursday. And wandering around all over the place, just checking out the various different booths and mansions that they've set up there. You know, some of these companies are just, like, unbelievable, the amount of... the Microsoft display, you could live there. Yeah, I don't know if you'd want to, but it's just, it's pretty crazy things they have going on there. America Online, you know, all those people were there. But you also had some interesting places. OmniPoint was there as well. I'll get to that in a second. But the thing is, they have all these computer browsers or Internet, Explorer and Netscape Navigate, all those things going on these computers that they have set up. Now, normally they're set up to run displays of the company that the computer belongs to. For instance, the AOL would have, you know, the AOL main page. Bell Atlantic has the Bell Atlantic main page. But, you know, the beautiful thing about browsers is that they can browse and they can go other places. So with about two people, you can pull this off pretty successfully, where you just sort of, you know, have one person block the annoying sales rep, which insists on saying, "Can I help you?" if you walk up to the computer terminal, or perhaps engage the representative in some sort of meaningless discussion and turn them around so they don't see the other person typing in the URL that takes them to the Free Kevin banner, which then gets displayed on all the computer terminals throughout the show. So that's what Internet World can be like if done properly. If you want a copy of the Free Kevin GIF, JPEG, I'm not sure what it is. Simply go to www.2600.com. It only stays on there for a couple of seconds. We had it staying on for a long time during the show, but now it only stays on for a couple of seconds and it goes to something else. So you have to catch it fast. I think you hit a right click or something, and then you simply capture the GIF or the JPEG and then put it on your own website. Spread it around. Do whatever you want with it. And get the word out. Okay, so the OmniPoint booth was there. And this was a lot of fun because they had the damn parrot, you know, the stupid parrot from the commercial. I don't know if it's the same one, but they had two of them, actually. And this guy was, like, doing all kinds of bizarre things to this poor parrot, you know. He was making it faint, you know. It would stand on his finger, and then it would suddenly keel over backwards and do all these tricks and you know, look really cute and stuff like that. And I realized, you know, about 20 minutes into this presentation that not a single word had been said about OmniPoint service. You have to wonder, you know, what kind of company uses, you know, a parrot to sell long-distance service and doesn't really, you know, talk about the long-distance service as much as the parrot. I don't know. It was fun. I mean, yeah, I got a lot out of it, but I didn't really learn much about, you know, telephony. But to OmniPoint's credit, they have expanded tremendously on Long Island. In fact, just today, I was picking up their signal in places I never dreamed I'd be able to get their signal. And it would appear that they've overtaken Sprint PCS out on the island as far as providing coverage. So that's something that I think is kind of neat. A couple other news items. 1 week after federal judge Claudia Wilkin refused to grant the FCC a permanent injunction to shut down Free Radio Berkeley and ordered the FCC to respond to specific constitutional questions, the response came not in the form of legal briefs as requested, but in the form of a SWAT team busting down the door of Tampa, Florida micropower broadcaster Doug Brewer. This happened actually last month, but we're just getting reports on it now. According to Steve Dunifer, Free Radio Berkeley, he says this certainly shows that the FCC has nothing but contempt for due process and the Bill of Rights. It is clear that the FCC is carrying out its marching orders given to it earlier this year by the National Association of Broadcasters, who have begun a search and destroy campaign against micropower broadcasting. Speaking for SF Liberation Radio, Richard Edmondson stated the raid against Doug Brewer and other microbroadcasters in Florida, coming as it has just a week after the federal court ruling in California, is a display of lawless thuggery, which demonstrates to me more clearly than ever that the U.S. government does not care about its own courts, its own laws, or its own constitution. Okay, and now we have some listener feedback, which you're welcome to send to us, either by mail. You know, we're not getting enough real mail anymore. We get a lot of electronic mail, but we don't get a whole lot of real mail because everyone's sending email these days. I guess it's good for paper, but still, it's nice to get envelopes, you know? And for the other people around here at the station, you know, it's good for them to see that Off the Hook gets tons of mail. They don't see the electronic mail that comes in because we get tons of that, but wasn't a single letter in the box today. So the address, Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. If you want to email us, OTH at 2600.com. Okay, this person is writing on behalf of some people in the greater Richmond, Virginia area. A while back, a local telephone company called Farmers and Merchants Telephone of Virginia, straight out of Green Acres. They had owned some of rural Virginia. Later on, they were bought by Centel, which, to the best of my knowledge, owns some of Florida. I think they mean owns some of the phone companies in Florida, not the actual state. Until a couple of years ago, Centel quietly, but... Sprint took over Centel, and now they're Sprint Centel Virginia. A couple months ago, a friend of mine found a phone number, and when anyone called it, they got another dial tone. And they could dial out from there, call anywhere, anytime, without any charges on the phone bill. So we assumed Sprint Centel picked up the bill, which we mutually dubbed the loop. We both used that loop, this person and one other person. We used that loop a lot without any disturbance in service. When my friend foolishly told about 8 other people about the loop, it worked for a while. Then one night all of us got the same recorded message about how this guy caught us and how we won't get in there anymore. Don't you love those phone company recordings? Yeah. I could just hear it in a southern drawl too. What was funny is that the guy, his name is Freddie T. Reynolds. You don't have to say your name, the name if you prefer. Well, okay. I don't know how you know the name of the guy that's giving the recording. His voice sounds like Hans Molman from The Simpsons. I don't know who Hans Molman is in The Simpsons. Is he the guy that looks like a mole? No? Nobody knows who Hans Molman is. Okay. Well, anyway. After that comical delight from our friends at Centel, we couldn't use the loop because we would get the recorded message. I want to ask you or any of your faithful listeners if they have ever experienced this or know of anyone else that has heard about this. Yes, it's called getting caught making illegal phone calls, and you should be glad that that's all that happened to you. Basically, you're doing this from your home. It's very silly and very dangerous. And eventually, somebody gets a bill. So when somebody gets a bill, they tend to do something about it, like say, what in the world is going on to the phone company? If it's the phone company themselves, they can skip that step and just find out what's going on by looking at who's calling it. So I would be very happy that that's all that happened. This kind of thing is going on everywhere. Let's see. We have this out of England. British Telecom is developing a system. We talked about this actually a while back. Developing a system that would transmit motion pictures to individual movie houses, replacing traditional celluloid prints. According to the London Sunday Telegraph, the newspaper said that the system, which reportedly has the backing of DreamWorks and other studios, may be launched early next year and may be extended to other countries, effectively supplanting current overseas distribution channels. BT confirmed that it is involved in developing the system, but declined to provide details, saying that it would make an announcement early next year. Well, what's that book you're looking at, Fiverr?
Improving security and performance.
Improving systems. Improving security and what?
Performance.
Yeah? Are you going to read that whole thing?
No, it's just I was just flipping through it.
Okay. Your microphone's about a half mile from your face, so move it up a little closer. There you go.
This one?
That's better.
That one?
No, that one.
No, this one, yeah.
That one?
This one says on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then there's another one over there. I didn't see that one. Okay. There we go. So what's new with you?
Oh, boy.
The cabs on strike?
Oh, are they?
I don't know. Well, you just walked in. It's 20 minutes after the
Oh, yeah. I'm getting a late start.
Are you on Central Time again or something?
Yeah, I'm actually on Pacific Time.
Well, get a glass of orange juice or something. A bunch of...
That's what I need, a glass of orange juice.
Whatever it is that you start the day with.
Yeah.
Let me continue with some mail here. I just heard on Off the Hook for December 9th that the virus supposedly planted by Pants Haggis is said... Is it really sheep guts?
What's that?
Last week you told us that Haggis is about sheep guts.
It is. It's sheep guts.
Why does somebody name themselves after that? I don't get it.
They like Scottish food.
All right, whatever. I mean, that's just kind of bizarre. But anyway, it's set to go off on Christmas Day of 1998, but in the December archive of www.hacked.net, it's said on the page text that it would go off on Christmas Day of 1997. I don't know which is true, but I would like to call attention to this and wonder if this could be verified and which document is true. Well, the thing is, since the virus doesn't really exist, it doesn't really matter what year they put in there because it's just the year that it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But... the text I see says 1998. Now, if there's another version of that floating around somewhere that says 1997, then either somebody made a clerical error, or there's two viruses, or who knows? Who knows what exactly?
Somebody pointed out something interesting to me a few days ago about Haggis, about the person,
okay,
not the food.
Well, I thought it was a group.
Is it?
Well, they keep saying we.
Well, Pants and Haggis are two people, ain't they?
I thought it was like two groups that had a merger, you know, like the
really?
Telegraph Union type
of thing.
So
it's like all the little guts?
I guess.
Got together or something?
Yeah.
No, somebody pointed out to me that if you go into Alta Vista and you do a search, I don't think it's only Alta Vista, it's a couple different search engines. Do a search for our good buddy Eugene Spafford at Purdue. The anti-hacker security buffoon guy?
Yeah.
Actually, it's not on his homepage anymore, but it's still in a lot of the search engines. It says something like owned by Haggis or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, something to that effect.
And they never got that out?
No, it's still in most of the search engines because they haven't updated yet.
God
it says
bless
like
him.
Eugene Spafford's homepage, something Haggis.
That's one I'd like to see.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. You missed our 700 Club expose.
700 Club?
The 700 Club did a whole big thing on Electronic Armageddon with multiple quotes from our friend Wayne Schwartow. Apparently, he's going to all parts of the world preaching his gospel.
Wasn't the 700 Club like some old anarchy group?
Pat Robertson. Not anarchy, Pat Robertson.
Oh, okay.
All right. Big difference there.
All right.
Punk. Anarchy. Oh. These are Christian Broadcasting Network, for God's sake.
Same thing.
All right. From it's finally started to happen. Remember, we've been bitching about this for weeks now, about the new fees for 800 numbers that are being passed along to us. 30 cents per call from a payphone for some crazy reason. Well, guess what? It opens things up now to all kinds of fraud, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. That's right. Because the payphone compensation scheme makes no provision for wrong numbers, 800-number operators have to pay up. Now, dispatch centers across the country already have reported instances of mass auto-dialing from payphones to their 800-number dispatch lines since the compensation scheme went into effect. The calls are recorded messages that say, "What's that? I'm sorry. I must have dialed a wrong number," and then disconnect. Each call lasts about 5 or 6 seconds and blocks the dispatch center's caller identification systems, which doesn't really make much sense because A&I should be transmitted instantly. But regardless, dispatch centers believe that the calls are being made by payphone service providers looking to cash in on the surcharge. Whoever this is, they know what they are doing. Most long-distance carriers bill in 6-second increments, and I guess on a bill that wouldn't stand out very much. You know, you wouldn't see a whole lot of... you'd see a lot of little calls, but they'd all add up. And plus, they don't add the 30-cent surcharge into the bill, usually. Because there's no provision for wrong numbers, 800-number people have to pay the 30 cents each time. In the petition, the dispatching party suggests that the FCC make the calls a minimum of 15 seconds, eliminating the wrong number issue. I don't know if that really makes things much better, though. It's crazy. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's going to happen with a stupid law like this, where you actually have to pay extra to make an 800 call from a payphone.
Is this going to apply to 888 and 877
of course.
Area codes?
Why do you think one area code would get it and another wouldn't? It's for all toll free. It's not just, you know, one.
Just double checking.
Other. Yeah, it's really pretty silly. Here's a letter we got about the GSM cloning issue that we talked about last week. Guys, I think you made some erroneous remarks in discussing the GSM cloning hack on the 12-9 episode of Off the Hook. I want the cliffhanger ending. I read the original article in Risk Digest. I think the authors point out a significant security hole. This letter actually is from Mr. Upsetter, one of our writers. This is not a roundabout space-age hack which requires probing the SIM card, as Fiber suggests. The hack requires a microwave receiver and protocol analyzer for monitoring the link between the authentication center and the base station, plus a SIM card emulator. This equipment is not terribly sophisticated, but it is somewhat expensive, $20,000 as mentioned. But $20,000 is not that big an investment to get into the GSM cloning business. This particular hack allows them to clone any phone given the IMSI, which can be read off the air by monitoring the GSM reverse channel. The only real practical problem with this hack is storing the random challenges and responses in the phone for later use. Otherwise, you're going to have to lug around all these receivers and stuff to make a clone call. Any comments on this?
Yeah, actually, that's not exactly true. But I actually responded to Mr. Upsetter in brief.
Uh-huh.
And I told him that I can't really go into very many details, but the thing that was pointed out in Risk's Digest is a rather convoluted and silly way of doing something that could be done a lot cheaper and easier. And I just told them that there are easier ways to pluck a chicken.
Uh-huh. Okay, well.
But, I still stand by my original claim that GSM is... as of yet, the most secure wireless protocol for wireless phones. It does not require $20,000 and space-age hardware. I still call it space-age. Do you know anybody that has a microwave receiver to receive cellular broadcasts?
Do I have to answer that?
Well, whether you do or not, the point is that this isn't something you go to Radio Shack and buy.
No, no. In fact, don't go to Radio Shack to buy that. I mean, that's just like... now you've gotten me started on Radio Shack again, but...
yeah.
Let me tell you something, okay? This Sprint PCS phone is turning into a real nightmare, okay? I went to the website. Now, I've got the Samsung thing here, right? I got the Samsung phone. Now, they told me initially I get all this talk time and all this standby time and all that kind of thing. And then I didn't. Then I brought it back to them and said, hey, you know, I'm not getting what you know, you said I'd get. And they said, well, that's because we didn't say that. So, okay, I realized that I'd sort of been, you know, bamboozled, I guess is the most polite word I can use.
Run amok?
Then I went to the website and I looked at the stats for this phone. And the regular battery is supposed to have a standby time of 24 hours. And the extended battery, which I bought last week, is supposed to have a standby time of 60 hours. Well, on the regular battery, I get a total of about 6 hours standby. And on the extended one, I get 12. So that, now something is wrong. I don't know. I think this phone is draining batteries. It's every battery I buy has one quarter the amount of time that it's supposed to have. Now, I brought it into another Radio Shack yesterday, and we all spent, you know, a good hour trying to figure this one out. And we're in the middle of doing tests right now. And right now, the results of the test are that it's getting worse.
Is it possible Samsung multiplied by 10 when they were...
I don't know what they did. No, I don't think so, because I called them, and they said that, contrary to what the first Radio Shack guy said, if you're out of range, it takes up more juice. He actually said this. He said, it takes more juice if you're out of range, since I'm out of range where I am most of the time. So, I mean, it's silly to even, you know, tell people things like that.
When they tell you how much talk time and how much standby, they're supposed to give you a best estimate.
Right. Well, the thing is... you know, having it off all the time. I'm out of range, like, all the time.
Right.
Having it like that all the time, there's not going to be any talk time.
Right.
So the standby time has to approximate, has to get somewhat close to it. Now, 6 hours is nowhere close to 24 hours. And 12 hours is nowhere close to 60 hours. So either I've got two batteries here that are completely, like, dead and old and all that kind of thing. Either I've got a bad charger that doesn't know how to charge a battery, or I have a phone... that is simply, you know, draining the battery like nobody's business.
Do you have more than one charger? Like, is there a quick charger? And
There's actually two different... It's in the same piece.
Right.
You can either stick the phone in, like a quick charge thing, which I did last week, and then found that it wasn't charged at all.
Yeah.
You know, contrary to their instructions, I left it on overnight. You know, I mean, that is what they say to do. And I took it, and it wasn't charged at all. So I'm beginning to suspect something's wrong with that.
Yeah, it sounds like possibly your charger is damaged.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Although when I took it in yesterday, they looked at the battery and said, "Yeah, it's fully charged."
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, this is like, you know, this is a medical mystery here, trying to figure this one out. So anyway, that's where I stand. But don't mention Radio Shack anymore.
Okay.
They don't ask you for your address anymore, though. They don't ask you for your phone.
No,
anymore.
Really?
Well, they didn't ask me. Maybe it was the look in my eyes. But you know, I went to another place, right? I went to another place to get something else. Right. I'll tell you what I was going to get. I wanted to get one of those, you know, CD spinning racks. You ever see those things?
CD spinning racks?
Yeah, they spin. You know, you put your CDs in them. There's four sides, and you spin them around.
Oh, the little carousel.
Yeah, the carousel things. I wanted to get one that holds 400, like the one I already have, because I have more than 400 CDs. Right. I have more like 800 CDs, so I figured I'd get two of them. They don't make them anymore. They don't make four. They only make 300. They don't make 400.
Are they stackable?
No, they're not stackable.
Oh.
I wish they were. You get these little tiny things now. Now, I can't imagine, unless some idiot did something and got killed with one of these 400s, why they don't make these things anymore. Maybe it, like, fell on top of him or something. That's the only thing I can think of. And the reason I say that is because when I was putting all my CDs into the 300, as soon as I got the very last one into the first side, the whole thing fell down because it was top-heavy. And it just toppled right over. So maybe 400 of them will kill you. And 300 will just hurt you a little bit. Maybe that's why they don't make the 400 anymore. If anyone knows there's a 400, please let me know, because I'd like to know. But anyway, when I went to this place to buy this thing, they asked me right away for my phone number. And of course, you know, being a smart aleck, I don't like to give my phone number out, so I gave them a fake number. Imagine my surprise when they addressed me by name.
From the fake number?
Yeah. Apparently, I gave out the same fake number I gave last time.
Oh, great.
What do you think the odds of that are? I've gotten really, really predictable here. So either that, or they've got some power that I don't really want to know what they have. Okay, two more letters here, then we have a special guest. And we'll take some phone calls, too, from all around the world, hopefully. Letter number one. I was going to tell you all to be careful because I heard some stuff, so don't do anything that you all could get in trouble for.
What?
It's a letter. Here it is.
It's a real letter.
It's a real letter. And I think we should heed that.
Wow.
Yeah. There might be something hidden in there. It might be a very valuable clue. I was going to tell you all to be careful because I heard some stuff, so don't do anything that you all could get in trouble for.
Heard some stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was going to tell us.
Huh.
But he's not telling us. I don't know.
You think maybe he can't? He's prevented
maybe
from telling
that's us? Possible. He might be in trouble.
Wow.
Might have to help him. And second letter, which came in shortly before the first one, actually. The time has come for us to band together. Register with the First Order and be saved. Only the chosen will survive the millennium. So I've already registered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We've talked about this briefly over the past couple of weeks. Two University of Pittsburgh computer science majors were abruptly barred from accessing the net by campus officials, physically banned from all the college's computing labs, ordered not to contact the staff member who shut down their access, and threatened with expulsion. Their offense, building a free online resource for those on the cutting edge of computer security issues, according to the students. Now, we have one of them here. Which one are you, by the way?
I'm JP.
You're JP, okay. I don't see which... You're the first one there, right?
The first one, John Rinsvich, yes.
Got it. Tell us in your own words, first of all, what kind of site was this? It's called Anti-Online.
Anti-Online was called. I brought it up my 10th grade year of high school. I started it, and it kind of developed from there, where basically we would go out and at first what we do is gather exploits other people had already found, and then find patches other people had already found, put them together with a description for users.
Okay.
A small site when we first started, run off a 5-meg shell account I had from an ISP. Then other students from what turned out to be across the world started getting interested in it as well. And it kind of grew to the point where we actually started, as we learned more, as our education progressed, where we were actually developing our own exploits and our own fixes for exploits that were already found by others. So I graduated from high school, decided to go to the University of Pittsburgh, and all of the dorm rooms in the university have Ethernet connections. Right in the dorm room.
This is the Home of CERT, right?
10 base T. Home of CERT is actually CMU, but it's part of a collaboration.
Okay.
10 base T, we have what they call an acceptable use agreement we had to sign, stating what you're allowed, what you can and can't do. So I signed that, and one of the things on it said that if you run a server, you're responsible for its content.
Mm-hmm.
So that just triggered my mind, wow, I can run Anti-Online now from here, locally.
Mm-hmm.
I can put more content up. I'll have more space. I can run my own servers, configure them, more interactive content, work on some of the newer things to hitting the internet where I don't have to count on an ISP. So I brought it up, got it running. A ton of students working on it from around the world, really filling in information and things, and started getting really popular to the tune of 500,000 hits in a matter of 20 days when it was first brought up.
Wow.
To me, it was wow, too.
Were these mostly students that are hitting it, or are we talking about security professionals now?
Everyone from the Treasury Department, people working on that, people from NASA, military, officials from CERT.
All the same people that visit our website.
It's probably same group.
They have nothing better to do than cruise the web all day long.
All right.
So did you get lots of emails?
Lots of email. We were getting a few hundred emails a week from people with questions and things.
Mm-hmm. And what did you get out of this besides the satisfaction of knowing
that was basically
this?
It's what I'm planning on majoring in, a self-design major in computer security and internet technology. And so we were working on that, and one night we saw that our hits went down to zero. We got no hits like over several hours.
That's a trend.
Yeah. So I immediately thought, well, some smarock was doing some DOS attack on us. It's kind of, let's bring down the security site.
Had you been attacked before?
Yeah, hundreds of times. Smart attacks, WinNuke, SSPing, things like that that we had been patched against. So we worked all night reinstalling TCP/IP and checking server configurations and things. And next morning, we have an AUDEX system at the university.
Those are nice.
Yeah. We got a message from the head of residential networking saying that he had disconnected our Ethernet access and had filed student judicial charges against us. And that was a Sunday morning around 5 o'clock a.m.
You couldn't see that morning. You weren't actually connected to the net at all?
Well, I thought it was a DOS attack at first. I thought my TCP had become corrupted or something like that.
Uh-huh.
As we were working and I got that.
So it never crossed your mind that
the university would just shut it down. We got no call. It happened 5 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, which seems to me off business hours.
Well, some crusty old technician must have gotten around to it just about that time.
Yeah, about that time.
Yeah.
So when I found that out, I tried to get in contact with him. He was unavailable, so I moved the site. I did some change of where the domain name pointed to an ISP and put up information about what had happened to us and also the email of the admin who filed charges against us. Start basically a letter-writing campaign was my goal.
Right.
And next week, instead of hearing from him describing why we were charged, because I was still confused and why we'd been charged in the first place, I hear that more charges have been filed against us for harassing the administrator. I got a no-contact order put against me saying I can't talk to the administrator. Or if anyone else on the Internet contacts him regarding my site, I could face expulsion from the university.
So he must have been getting a lot of mail.
He got a lot of mail. So that's where it's.
Are you allowed to give the guy's name?
It's Lee Bannister.
I guess you are. Okay.
Yes, Lee Bannister.
All right.
Once again, Lee Bannister.
That's in the archives. It's at the University of Pittsburgh.
University of Pittsburgh.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Okay.
15213.
Right.
So we started...
But you reached an agreement, basically.
Basically, eventually we reached
this Wired story here, and it says everything ended happily, right?
Yeah,
so tell us about the agreement.
Agreement said... they said the reasons my site was shut down was not because of content. They worried about bandwidth. That's official university position.
Mm-hmm.
So I agreed that I'll limit the number of simultaneous connections our server will get, the number of people that can view my page at the same time.
How many?
I'll limit that.
How many would that be?
It was at 250. I agreed to limit it all the way down to 50 simultaneous.
Okay. What kind of bandwidth would you need for something like that?
It would be very little bandwidth for something like that.
Right.
It was running off of ISP that had a 56K dial-up at one point.
We're just talking about a website here.
It was just
right?
a website, right.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't
no
take much
data,
bandwidth.
Right.
You just get something and you're not there anymore.
So I agreed to that, and they also were worried that I had Antonine.com pointed to my computer.
Okay.
They said the .com nomenclature kind of said it's a commercial site, and that's banned, although we never did ask for money or have advertisers or anything like that. So I went out to Internet and paid the $100 and registered Antonine.org.
Okay.
So I was going through the process of getting the domain name system worked out and everything and bringing the web page back up. And one another part of the agreement was that I would talk to a university spokesperson who would help me with the technical aspects of doing the domain name system.
You see, now, I hope this is a lesson, that communication is important, that once you talk to people, they'll work something out, and everything will work out nicely. You know, these people are not some sort of alien race. They're human beings just like us. It all ended happily, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought until I got down there, sat down in the room. Secretary was real nice. Asked me if I wanted something to drink, you know, made
See,
me real comfortable.
They're
it was
real nice,
nice
people.
Very accommodating.
Great people.
Shut the door and...
Salt of the earth.
She says, you know, I see you have Antonine.org pointed to your computer now. She says, you can't have that. I said, well...
.org? They don't want that? There's nothing left.
Well, I know. I said, well, that was the agreement. This is made by the provost of the university.
Perhaps a .mil is what they're after.
I don't know. Provost of the university agreed to allow the .org. He's, you know, head of education for the university agreed to it.
Right.
And she said if they said that, it's she wasn't aware that they said that. And if they did, it's because they didn't know what they were talking about, and I would not bring that domain back up. That's why I was, so it was kind of a nice sudden shift in
so what,
mood.
So what did they expect you to do?
They expected me to use a signed domain that the university assigned to me. We all have static IPs and static domains. So the anti-online address now, they said, should be jpvst7.j.resnet.pitt.edu. That should be the address I should use for anti-online.
That is easy to remember, I'll say that.
See, you got memorized already. they said, that's the address I should use. They said, I said, okay, I'm not going to discuss that right now. I'd have to talk to a representative.
Would you not be able to simply have the anti-online.org page have a link to that crazy thing you just said?
That's not the point. The main point is that we had an agreement. It was a binding agreement. I made up to my end of the agreement. I expected the university to make up to their end.
Uh-huh.
And to top this off, I said, all right, let's talk about bandwidth now. I made my proposal to limit 50 connections. And she told me, she says, bandwidth was never a concern. She says, Ken Service, who's the university spokesman, she says, probably told that to the media because he had to tell them something. And that's what he came up with.
Well, why didn't you just tell them the truth?
Oh, well, that's a good question. They wanted originally they wanted me to sign a gag order saying I wouldn't talk to the press at all after we did this.
And I take it you didn't sign that. Okay.
No, I did not sign that.
Well, your presence here would testify to that. So they're saying that you can use unlimited bandwidth then, but you just can't use the antionline.org.
Right, can't use .org, and they don't want... Now, here's, again, the tricky language. They don't want me to provide free access to university resources to non-university personnel, which could be translated. That could basically mean that no one outside the university could hit my webpage using that language.
That's certainly true.
So at first, I would never thought of it that way, but now, I mean, I have to look at every possible wording. So I decided that I was going to, since I kept up with mine, I was going to make up the university, keep up with their end of the agreement, and I pointed .org to my machine.
Was this in writing? Was this agreement in writing?
It was in writing.
Okay.
I pointed it to my machine anyways. And I got a call, and letters slid under my door within a few hours saying they wanted to meet with me immediately. And I told them I'd be unavailable until after Christmas vacation, and that's where things stand now.
Is the site still up?
It's down now just because of technical problems, but yeah, it is.
Okay.
It will be up.
And that's www.antionline.org. Okay, where's .com go now?
.com is still on an external ISP that just points to the .org page.
Okay. Wow. Now, for some reason, and we're going to start taking phone calls, 212-279-3400, country code 1 if you're outside the United States. For some reason, this case, and I think it's very interesting, it's the kind of thing that we've talked about in the past, but Wired, EFF, they've all jumped on this. What is the magic quality that gets their attention? We have to find this out.
It's been Wired, USA Today, Village Voice, New York Times, Washington Post, been in all of them. I think what it is, again, it's happened in the governmental phase. We get to the point where technology has progressed faster than our society has been able to deal with it. They're trying, the university's trying to apply laws to what I'm doing in a way which they were never meant to be applied. They have no rules in place to deal with the type of things that I was doing. Just like the government on a larger scale doesn't have the type of rules or laws in place to deal with things. So they're using obscure ways of applying older laws to current technology.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, there certainly has been a lot of attention drawn to this, and I imagine we'll be hearing a lot more when the new year starts. You know, you find out what happens, but your service has not been cut off.
No, service at this point has not been cut off, and they did offer to reimburse me the $100 that I had to spend because of the misunderstanding about the .org nomenclature.
I mean, how does this hurt them? What do you think the real reason is behind this?
I don't know.
What are they upset at? They're not upset about bandwidth.
Honestly, I've still never been told how the original charges, and I had like 13 of them filed against me, how any of them related to the site. Still yet to receive, and I still am barred from talking to the administrator who filed the charges.
Well, now, I mean, do you think it's some sort of like anti-hacker type thing? They think you're running a hacker site?
I honestly don't know. They keep saying it's not because of content, but yet every...
Well, it's not content, it's not bandwidth, left?
What is it?
I don't know, but hopefully we'll get an answer from them at some point. JP from antionline.org now.
.org.
Yeah, well, we wish you the best of luck, and if any callers have any questions... he'll be here to answer them as well. Let's go to our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
New York City.
New York City. Well, we're getting out tonight, aren't we?
Well, you must recognize my voice.
Yes, I do. That's why I'm going on to the next phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Great show.
How you doing?
Great show. Listen, I just wanted to tell you guys that ASDL is available in area code 212.
ASDL or ADSL?
ADSL. Oh, I'm dyslexic. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I always do that.
Where is it available?
It's from UUNet in area code 212 in Manhattan.
It's available right now?
Yes, it is.
Even as we speak, it's available?
As we speak. And I just saw them. They were, by the way, they were there at the convention.
Yes, they were. They certainly were.
And I spoke to them because I didn't believe what I read in my network world that they had it working. But they do.
Farber, you got that hat ready?
What I'd like to know is which central offices support it, like two?
No, a lot more than that. They said they have almost full coverage of Manhattan.
This is something I definitely... Do you know anything about pricing?
Yeah, it's cheap. It's like, I think it was a flat rate of $40 for residential, you know?
Well, this is something...
And then they were talking about that residential and business is the same and da-da-da-da, with, you know...
Any word on the kind of bandwidth they support?
Well, they say that they're going to be increasing it every month, but supposedly It's going to be, it's called UNET's Preferred Access 128 service, based on the Ascend Communications IE DSL equipment.
Well, I hope it's going faster than 128.
Yes, it has to be. It says it creates a 128K bit per second connection over copper wiring, but much faster is available than that.
Okay, well, we will look into this.
Yeah, well, I've been dying for you guys to check it out and test it and see what the bugs are, because this is the first one in our area. You know, they've had it in Ottawa and everywhere.
Do you know if this is restricted to, like, you know, only certain buildings or...
No. Bell Atlantic will do that, and Pac Bell did that, and everybody else did that. But no, that's why it's the only one that's up and running. GTE is going to come in with one. SBC and Pacific Bell are doing one, and GTE. Oh, I said that. Everybody's jumping in, but the big boys like Bell Atlantic are screwing me. Is holding onto their ISDN line, so they're not ready till after June.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to be at least less than 1,800 meters from the switch, which, you know, you have to do by reflectometer. And if you're one meter over, you're lost.
Uh-huh.
Or if you've got 1,800 to the door and you live on the eighth floor, you're lost, you know?
That is a problem, yes.
Yeah.
So that's something. We're going to look into this and report back to people.
Yeah, please do. Please do, and report it for us, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for calling.
You.
Okay, bye.
All right. You think that's real fiber?
Well, if it's available, I'll order it.
Uh-huh.
Somehow I doubt when I call Bell Atlantic they're going to have any idea what I'm talking about.
Well, let's speak to UUNET and see what they have to
say. Well, yeah, but ultimately the line has to be put in by the local phone company.
Yes, but if UUNET is providing the service, they'll be able to handle that aspect of it, probably.
Yeah, well, we shall see.
Save us the grief of dealing with Bell Atlantic.
Yeah.
That would be something. You could run a website like yours from your house. Lots of bandwidth.
Cheap.
Very cheap. $40.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that we're after. And they've been doing it in Canada for a little while. They've been doing some testing there. But nothing here yet, nothing nearby. But we knew it was coming. Good evening. You're on the air.
This is Bell Atlantic.
No, what? It's not. It doesn't even sound like James Earl Jones. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up. Yes, it's you. You're on the air. Oh, that was your moment. All right, let's go to another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. Where are you calling from?
Syracuse, New York.
Syracuse. 315 area code.
Yes, correct.
All right. So what's going on up there?
Not too much. I just wanted to, talk to you about the Sprint PCS.
Okay.
I have Sprint PCS, and I have the Qualcomm phone.
Uh-huh.
And,
is that the dual-mode phone?
No, I didn't want the dual-mode. It wasn't worth the extra $50.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I would not want to use analog under any circumstances.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I feel. But, my battery... I really haven't had any problems with it. They say standby time's about 48 hours, and now I haven't tested that fully, but the talk time is well over what they say it is. I believe they say 2 hours straight.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you've got a different kind of phone. If you had the same kind of phone as me, then I'd be able to compare, but I've got the Samsung real cheapo model thing.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah.
Also, I was wondering if you guys heard about...
What do you mean you noticed that? Well... It's an okay phone. It's all right, except it doesn't work very well. But go ahead.
I was wondering if you heard about the kid in Syracuse from Syracuse University who had the MP3s of Pearl Jam on his website and was called by the record company to take them down.
Uh-huh.
Well, I also...
It was the record. It wasn't the band itself that showed up at his house at all four in the morning.
No, but...
killed his cat. That was just a rumor?
I don't know exactly, up here at Syracuse, we also have residential networking, and he got contacted by the head of it today about his bandwidth that he was using, and I don't know.
Really?
It was interesting that you guys had a story about that.
Yeah.
You know, tonight, that same sort of thing.
This kind of thing happens all the time. When schools are involved, they invoke all kinds of, prehistoric laws and rules that, that they just quote or make up on the spot.
Oh, yeah. I also, I sent you guys an email this week. I'm not sure if you got it, but it was about the same thing, only I didn't mention any names. But now that it's a big media extravaganza, I guess, I mean, this kid had a TV crew in his room today.
Uh-huh.
I sent you an email about it, you know, saying that he didn't want to use any names, but uh-huh. I'm sure you got it now, but
yeah.
Epic called him, and
wow.
So...
well, I'm sure we'll hear more about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the show.
Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. How's the signal coming in up there?
It's coming in pretty good. I actually, you know, I have my thing turned down now, so I can't hear it, but
right.
It's coming in pretty well.
Uh-huh. Cool. Okay, well, keep listening, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care. We just got a quote, actually, sent to my OmniPoint email. I guess this comes from one of the IRC channels, and it quotes a previous show of ours. You know that when your words come back to haunt you, Fiber?
Yeah.
Well, these are your words. If it is available, I will eat my hat.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's here in black and white on the phone now, in case you need to see it.
Oh, as soon as somebody proves to me it's available, I'll eat my hat.
Right, but, you know, what worries me is that you don't really have a hat.
Well, then I'm safe, aren't I?
I don't think you're going to get out of it that easily, no. I don't think... I think you have to eat whatever hat you have at the moment. 212-279-3400 is our telephone number. I'd like to get an update from the Real Audio people, if see how many people are out there, how many listeners, what countries they're from. We only have a couple of minutes, so please send that real fast. We are using Real Audio 5.0 now. We've cut over to that completely, and that's we don't support anything below that now. You just have to download it. It works on all platforms, so if you're listening on Real Audio, you probably know that now anyway. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. Where are you calling from?
Harrisonburg, Virginia.
All right. How you doing out there?
Well, I was listening to you on the net first,
uh-huh.
And you opened the floor to call, so I decided I'd actually give it a try. I'm surprised it actually got through.
It happens to everybody eventually, you know?
It is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a computer science major at James Madison University here in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And my main concern is, are any individuals that are actually pursuing computer security as a employment opportunity, are they going to be harassed or put in the same situation as this individual from Pittsburgh?
A lot of things depend on who you run into, who you get angry. It's certainly possible, sure.
Because if your only interest is such an avenue, are you then thereby limited by the university or its curriculum?
So you have to understand the people making the policy are the people that understand it the least.
Exactly.
And when that happens, you have all kinds of miscarriages.
I mean, I have a 60-year-old guy defining what my curriculum is.
Right.
As far as what I'm going to learn.
Probably has
so
never...
He gives me my degree, but it doesn't teach me anything I want to know.
Right. So someone who probably doesn't even use the internet and yet is telling you how to use it. You know, has no conception of what's real, what's not real, what is taken seriously and what isn't. So, yeah, there's a lot of bad things going on as a result of that.
Well, I thought I'd just comment on that.
All right, well, thanks for calling. Good to hear
Thank
from you.
Thank you. It was nice to talk to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And we are out of time. It's currently about time for us to go. JP, I want to wish you best of luck with the struggle ahead, and keep us updated as far as what they do next, you know, whatever that might be. And the holidays, usually colleges move against people when nobody's around, so that's the time to be wary. All right, we'll be back again next week. Say goodnight, Fiber.
Goodnight, Fiber.
All right. We'll see you in 1 week for another edition of Off the Hook. Stay tuned for Arab Voices coming up on WBAI New York. Good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. For Billy Bump, for the best expect the worst. I hope that's understood. For Billy Bump.
is Anissa Bouzian,
Rimkat Khuda,
and Barbara Nimri Aziz.
You've been listening to us on Saturday afternoons.